Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Finding the Sacred in Every Moment, The Purpose of Buddhist Ritual by Lama Cathy Wesley. Tibetan Buddhism is famous for its many types of ritual, prayer flags, prayer wheels, stupas, and the like. KTC is home to some of these practices. What do they mean, and how can we relate to something so different from our daily experience? Using Buddhist teachings, Lama Cathy will show the links between Buddhist practices and other human rituals to show the inner purpose of these practices. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you very much. What I like to tell people when I talk about KTC is, who knew that they were going to drop a Buddhist temple in the middle of Franklinton? But we did it. And we've been here, I know, weird, right? Oh yeah, we've done it twice, that's right. Because when we purchased the little old church that was on this property, in, 1990. That was the first time that we sort of brought a Buddhist temple to Franklinton, was in 1990 when we first moved in to the former Rich Street Church of Christ that was on this property. And then when that building burned down in 2016, we had to come back. We had to rebuild on this place. And so we made it a little bit more Tibetan temple this time, because the previous one was laid out like a Christian church, and a typical Christian church. And in fact, those of you who were here then will remember that that we had to cover the baptismal pool in the front of the church, because it was not a Baptist church, but they did practice adult baptism. And so they had people walk down little stairs into a baptistry and get dunked. And so we kind of figured that was not our style. So we did, somebody was joking about the fact that since it could technically hold water, we could actually like have a pool or something, but no, we're not doing it. So what we ended up doing was a friend of ours who was a woodworker built a structure inside the pool to hold up a floor, and we made it into one of our three shrines. We had a central shrine that had a Buddha image on it. On one side we had a protector shrine, and on the other side we had a lineage shrine. And so we ended up having three shrines in this area. And so here we haven't gotten the statuary yet. But there will be one large shrine area, and it will have basically where I'm sitting right now will be the location for the Buddha image, which is pretty cool. And so I will be, it's where I am now will be where the statue is, and then there'll be cabinets behind with images of Chen Rezig, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, and Tara, the female aspect of compassion. So, like I say, Buddhist temple, Franklinton, we did it. So it's a good feeling. So today, part of the reason I'm starting by talking about being a Tibetan temple in the middle of a town is because I'm going to be talking today about the ritual aspects of Buddhism. Because it is these aspects that are both attractive to people, and it sparks curiosity. It sparks curiosity for people, but it also can be a source of a little bit of confusion. So we like to talk about them as to what the symbolism of these things are, why we have them, why we use them, and the potential benefits of them. So I'm going to give a short talk on that today. And while I'm talking, if you think of questions, you can jot them down or make a note of them. And at the end of the talk, there'll be a question period. And you can, I'll have folks come up to the microphone if they would like to ask a question. And so you don't have to ask a question if you don't have one. But should you have one, rather than ask during the presentation, if you can hold your questions to the end, then we can have a good little discussion. I think it'll be fun. So anyway, what we do here mainly is we start with a prayer. And this prayer is the prayer of taking refuge. It will be recited two times in the English language, where we mention the Buddha as the teacher, the Dharma as the path, and the Sangha as our community. And then the final time, we'll recite it in the Tibetan language, just so we can hear the melody. Okay, so we'll start with the words in the Buddha. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Okay, now I'll recite it in Tibetan. Or Sanje Chudong Soji Chonahamla Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Chin Soji Pei Sunaham Ki Drola Penchir Sanje Druparsho. Okay, thank you. Now I'll recite one more short prayer and then we'll begin. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chi War Pe De Ten Chula Kadren Jembo Gwane Je Sun Te Kutsum Tugging A Drip Sal Tu So. Okay, thank you. All right. Today's topic is ritual practice in Tibetan Buddhism. I remember my teacher, Kenpo Kartha Rinpoche, once taking a small group of people, I think it was a group of college students, through a tour of the shrine room at our home monastery at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in Woodstock, New York. And one of the students asked him, why are there so many different images of the Buddha in this temple? Why do these temples have so many images of the Buddha? And Kempo Rinpoche gave a very simple answer. He said, oh, Tibetans are very busy people. So anyway, I thought it was pretty funny. Then he said, that was a joke. The real reason is that enlightenment is considered to be a singular state for an individual. It's a singular state, and yet it has many facets. I think of it as like a diamond, because when you have a cut diamond, it's a singular jewel, but the facets on the outside give you a different view into the interior. And so just like that, enlightenment is singular, and yet its facets are many. And there are different ways that an awakened mind can be expressed by different individuals. So your enlightenment will be expressed in a different way than somebody else's, and so on and so forth. And that this is the real reason why there are many images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And that's because there are many types of beings, and when those many types of beings gain enlightenment, they manifest their awakened activity in different ways to suit the different aspects of the human beings they encounter. So in other words, it's said that the Buddha Shakyamuni gave 84,000 teachings of Dharma. I actually think that's not an exact number. I think it's just a very large number as a way of saying a lot or countless or many. So he said that it was said by the Buddha that he gave 84,000 teachings to counteract the 84,000 types of mental affliction, which I think I can relate to. I think I can relate to my own mental afflictions some days as being countless or a lot. And so the Dharma then that he taught serves as an antidote for our mental afflictions. It serves as a way for us to work with and engage our mental afflictions in a creative and constructive way. And so when we practice the mantras of various Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we work on specific aspects of our personalities, purifying what is negative in our personalities and cultivating that which is positive in our personalities. And so when we are doing anything in the mundane world, we do it repetitively in order to gain some type of competency. I almost always use the example of learning to ride a bicycle, because that was really hard for me, because you had to both be on the bicycle upright and moving forward at a specific speed so you didn't fall over. It was a coordination that I wasn't very good at first, and I had to gradually learn. But I had to learn it through repetition. And that's why the practices of ritual in Buddhism are repeated. We recite mantras not just once, but many times, because our minds are always manifesting, moment to moment to moment. And our minds are manifesting continuously. And so our reality is being adjusted and conditioned moment by moment by what is on our mind. And if we choose to put something on our mind, we are causing that flow of thought to form around those thoughts. And especially if they're thoughts of virtue, it can lead us generally into a happier and more positive direction. Those of you who had the chance to see His Holiness Karmapa's teaching today on developing loving kindness, he encouraged everyone. He said, we need to make our own minds more peaceful and gentle and find the gentle and workable our own gentle and workable character within our own mind. Gentle and workable character within our own mind. And so because we all have the potential to become Buddhas in the future, the Buddhists say we have Buddha nature. We all have the potential to be a Buddha. There's no being on earth that doesn't possess it. Even the worst person we have ever seen still has Buddha nature within them. They still have the potential to awaken. So what he is telling us is to find the gentle and workable character within our own minds and to develop it, and then to use our gentle and workable character to influence others in a positive way. Wow. Use our own gentle and workable character to influence others so that they can also have a life that is more workable and gentle. So that's the theory behind mantra meditation, is that by doing mantra meditation over and over again and associating with the wisdom and compassion of various Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we put something useful on our continuously manifesting mind. We put something useful in the mix, and that usefulness then slowly grows and flourishes. And then hopefully our negative habits get less and less and less, because we're practicing positive habits more and more and more. That's the theory. And so that's why we sit and meditate together every week, to support each other That's why we recite mantras together, to support each other. And so any of the times that, any time you can come and participate in this, it strengthens your inner goodness. I use the example of a tuning fork as to why this works. Since we all have Buddha nature, when we're in the presence of sacred objects, like images of the Buddha, pictures or statues, and so on, when we're in the presence of those, it's like two tuning forks where one has been struck and is held next to the other. If they are tuned to the same note and one is struck and even held close to the other one begins to vibrate in sympathy, right? It's a scientific principle. And so when we get close to images of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and expose our minds to Dharma through mantra, meditation, and so on, we become more like the awakened beings that we associate with. We slowly accumulate the qualities and characteristics of gentleness and kindness, and slowly purify our mind of its own self-grasping, which the Buddha said was the basic cause of all of our suffering, was grasping and clinging. So when we're doing positive things on the one hand, the negative habits of self-clinging can slowly lose their power over us. And so these reminders are part of what we call ritual practice. Many people who have taken refuge and become Buddhist already have a daily ritual practice. It's pretty simple. They have an image of the Buddha in their home, whether it's a picture or a statue, and they have been instructed by their teacher to go in front of their image of the Buddha every day and to bow to the Buddha and to then take refuge in the Buddha, as we did at the beginning of this talk. And by doing this every morning, it's like we establish a foundation for our day of spiritual practice that we can then build on. I prefer, instead of foundation, sometimes I call it a bookend. Like we have a positive bookend at the front end of our day, and then if we do it again in the evening, then we have a positive bookend at the end of our day too. So our day is bookended with Dharma. Even if it's brief, even if we just briefly go before the Buddha and say, "I had a hard day, Buddha, be patient with me," and then take refuge. The idea is that we consciously cultivate a relationship with the Buddha. We consciously create this relationship with a Buddha that is first external to us, but over time we recognize it's actually being internal to us as well. We have many rows of offerings on large shrines. This one has a single row, but some elaborate shrines will have two, one going one way and the other going the other way. And I asked a Buddhist nun once, "Why are there two?" And she said, "Well, one is for the Buddha on the shrine, and the other is for the Buddha that's you, for the Buddha that's within you." And I thought, I don't know if that's like a correct answer, but I like it. Because we do have Buddha nature, and being able to acknowledge that and work with it is a really, really healthy and wonderful thing. So statues and ritual practice, bookending your day by greeting the Buddha in the morning and greeting the Buddha in the evening, this helps us to be reminded of the presence of our own Buddha nature. And in fact, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche said you could do everyday rituals while you're walking around. He said, people are going to put plates of food in front of you. Maybe you'll put in front of yourself, or maybe somebody will serve you a plate of food. He said, you can mentally offer it to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And then he said, you can imagine they give it back to you and that it's yours now to enjoy. So in this way, throughout the day, using small methods to remind ourselves of the presence of the Buddha and the presence of our own Buddha nature helps us cultivate that. Another offering you can make during the day is beauty I think everybody appreciates beauty. I don't know that there's a single person who doesn't appreciate the beauty of something. Sunrise, sunset, the moon, the stars, the flowers, the trees, birds, people. There's plenty of beauty everywhere. And my teacher said that when he was growing up in Tibet, he was poor, and his family were poor shepherds and farmers. And so they didn't have a lot of money to make any kind of grand offering. But he said the sky looked like it was the color of turquoise. And so they would offer the beautiful blue sky. And they would offer the beautiful wildflowers of spring and summer. They would offer the beautiful sparkling diamonds of snow in the winter to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And as they enjoyed this beauty, they made virtue out of it by making a mental offering of it. And so in this way, we can incorporate everyday rituals into our practice. We don't have to do anything fancy. We don't have to learn Tibetan, for example, in order to say the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. It's pretty simple. Om refers to the enlightened body of the Buddha. Hum is the enlightened mind of the Buddha. And Mani and Padme are parts of the name of Chenrezig. Mani means jewel, Padme means lotus, and it means honor to the Bodhisattva who holds the jewel and lotus. In iconography, he's depicted as holding a jewel, which is symbolic of our Buddha nature, and the flower of the lotus flower, which is symbolic of compassion and loving kindness. So we don't have to have lots of training to do these simple everyday rituals. But of course, if you want to learn the complex rituals of Buddhism, you're welcome to. In fact, part of the reason that I wanted to offer this talk today was not just to encourage you to have Dharma bookends at the beginning and end of your day, but also to let you know that coming up, we're going to have some nice activities. In this coming Saturday, we're going to have Lama Tom and Lama Adam teaching a class on the mantra meditation of the thousand arm Chenrezig that is done in a 2-day retreat that we hope to offer, if not next month, soon, called the Nyungne Retreat. That's a mouthful, Nyungne. It basically means a fasting retreat. And so what's going to happen next Saturday is that Lama Adam and Lama Tom are going to explain the retreat, how it's done, why it's done. Spoiler alert, it's done so that we become aware of the sufferings of the world and form a feeling of compassion for those sufferings. That's the purpose. And so that's why people do a complete fast from food and drink for 36 hours as part of the practice, because there are some beings that are so destitute, they never get to eat and they never get water. And so by creating this short period of hardship for ourselves, we become aware of their suffering and we are moved to want to benefit them. That's the spoiler alert. But Lama Tom is going to give a very complete review of that. So that's coming up. And just yesterday, we did a workshop with the Buddhist monument out front, the stupa. And we learned about the symbolism of the stupa, which is a monument that's of geometric shapes that suggests a meditating Buddha, a sitting meditating Buddha, and that it contains relics inside of it that provide a blessing to whoever sees the monument, whoever sees it is affected by the relics that are inside. So that means just casual people who go the wrong way on the one-way street out here. Has anybody else ever tried that? Yeah, okay, yeah, all right. I know, it's not easy anyway. So they'll get a blessing as they panic, you know, as they panic and turn around. I saw somebody do that just the other day, and it's like, oh my gosh. So that means that this monument actually has the potential to bless anyone who sees it, because it contains a relic of an enlightened being. Other methods of blessing, ritual blessing, that we have here at the KTC, you'll see them outside in the back, are prayer flags. I like to say that Tibetans believe in tangible prayer. They like their prayers tangible, and they like their blessings tangible. And so this is just one example of a prayer flag. And this one is called the wind horse, or lung ta. Ta means horse, and lung means wind. So this is the wind horse prayer flag. We have several types of prayer flags at the rear of our building, and it was a vision that I had in my mind, and I don't mean like a real vision. It was an imaginary idea in my mind that, if you recall the old church building that sat on this property, from time to time we would hang strings of prayer flags from the rear of the building that could actually be seen all the way from Route 315 by northbound traffic. And I had it in my mind that we probably wouldn't be able to string strings of prayer flags from the back of this sort of more modern looking structure. So I said, well, let's just go for it and plant 3 15-foot flagpoles in the back of the building and put 7 or 8 foot vertical prayer flags on it so that they can bless everybody who uses the alley, everybody who's touched by the wind that flies over this prayer. That's the theory behind the prayer flag, is that the wind that touches the prayers then benefits whoever is downwind. And so we have these prayer flags out back, and it was my idea that they would be there so that people who saw it from the freeway would say, I wonder what that is. And it's the same because we have the Karmapa flag, which is also a prayer flag at the rear of the building, blessing people who see it. So this type of ritual prayer is, it's just a reminder of who we are inside. Another form of tangible prayer that people will be aware of are prayer beads. Prayer beads. Many people have either single circles of prayers, prayer beads, or they will have longer strands of prayer beads. And the traditional number for these prayer beads is 108. Again, having to do with the 108 types of mental affliction then being purified by 108 prayers and so on. So then being able to recite these, we can stay present with the prayers and so on. So that's the function of prayer beads. So there's that. And then finally, the last form of tangible prayer that I'm going to talk about today is a prayer wheel. Now, not everybody has seen a Tibetan prayer wheel, but this one here is an American-made example of what a prayer wheel looks like. The old ones from Tibet were made of metal, like copper, and they had mantras printed or stamped into the outside of them. And inside, there would be a roll of many, many mantras. Dozens, if not hundreds, of mantras would be inside. And the theory behind this is that it has to do with the activity of the historical Buddha Shakyamuni. The historical Buddha Shakyamuni arose as a teacher in a time when the Hindu belief of the society that he was part of was that there would arise sort of a magical being called a wheel-turning monarch, and that this person, this monarch, would turn the wheel of the truth, or turn the wheel of Dharma, or turn the wheel of the law or truth, and that they would be both a secular ruler and a spiritual ruler, or a secular ruler who used spiritual means. So the wheel and turning the wheel, the idea of someone who turns the wheel of truth, and meaning they teach truth. So turning the wheel of truth became a metaphor for teaching. The one who turns, sets in motion the wheel of truth. And so I love the idea of prayers or Dharma being spun as a wheel. So you'll see that the Tibetans sort of took this literally. And so they decided that even ordinary people could turn the wheel of truth. And these were made available to people as a way of working with their minds. You'll love this. A number of years ago, there was a fad that you may or may not have heard of called fidget spinners. Okay, all right. So they're just like little toys that you spin, and it's fun to watch them spin. I mean, hey, I think we're all of us, 5 or 10 years old inside, and we appreciate things that move. Well, we're fascinated, we'll say, by things that move. And so somebody asked me if I owned a fidget spinner, and I said, I have a Tibetan fidget spinner. I said, this is how the Tibetans do it. They do it, but they just do it different than we do it. They put a prayer in it so that you're getting more for your money. You're getting more for your time investment. You're getting some merit, some virtue, from doing this. And it's, again, just like the prayer flags, the prayers that, the air that goes past it, it benefits the beings who use it. And some people, now, modern prayer technology has made great advances in recent years. This is my Richard Attenborough voice. Now, instead of using small pieces of conch shell to give a smooth spin to your prayer wheel, they actually use ball bearings. Ah, modern shrine technology continues to advance. And so this one is virtually squeakless. Because if you hear a Tibetan prayer wheel, it's but this one is virtually silent. So the shrine technology has taken leaps and bounds. But the theory is still the same, even though the mantras, and there are millions in this one because it's on microfilm. Like I'm saying, it's like shrine technology continues to advance. But I have a few friends, and those of you who met the wonderful teacher, Lama Lodro Lamo, when she was here before in the old building and so on, she undertook to spin the prayer wheel constantly, as much as she could. And so she had one of this size that she carried with her everywhere. Yes, even through the security line at airports. And she'd have to put it on the, So she would spin it wherever she went, and it struck me that she had probably benefited countless beings who saw her spinning the prayer wheel. So anyway, it's just something to keep in mind. And And I'm looking at my time to make sure, yeah, okay, I want to make sure I have plenty of time for questions. But all of these ritual means, they could become toys, meaningless, mundane toys, like anything else, right, that human beings like. It can become meaningless. Or it could, worse yet, become like a status symbol or, you know, some kind of evidence of our advancement as a practitioner or whatever. And so we have to use what the Buddha called a middle way of looking at all of these things. We use them and we make the aspiration to benefit beings with them. And we have to continuously refresh that motivation so that what we do with them is good and how it impacts other people is good. And I was touched today when the Karmapa was talking about the power of our own gentle and workable character to positively influence others around us. He said, yes, we are having horrible times, and resentments and anger and violence are all proliferating right now. But he said, we have to continue to add to this world positive things. We shouldn't stop. Just because the world is coming apart at the seams, we should act and help people as best we can and continue to hold a heart of love. And so he said, eventually we'll be able to overcome our own anger, but until we do, we have to keep trying. We can't give up. So I think this is enough for me to say right now, because I spoke about mantras, I spoke about statues, I spoke about the basic practice of refuge and prayers in the morning, refuge prayers in the evening. I spoke about the various types of tangible prayer, prayer beads, prayer flags, prayer wheels, and also the monument, such as the stupa out front. And I gave you an idea how relating to these everyday rituals can help remind us of our Buddha nature and strengthen our confidence in our Buddha nature and strengthen our capacity for uncovering it. And so I think this is where I'm going to stop right now and see if there's questions, if people have questions or things they're curious about. And if you do, you can come around, I think there's a chair at the back of the room. You can, if somebody wants to be in the on-deck circle, they can, baseball metaphor, sorry. They can sit in one of the chairs at the rear, or they can just merely come up to the microphone. So, yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Too, but do you have any advice on how to keep those from just becoming another habit and really keep your heart in the right place?
Boy, I tell you what, that's an excellent question. The questioner, just to repeat the first part of the question, was saying that there's all kinds of habits we can develop, and even Dharma practice can become an empty habit that we just repeat without really being present. And what strategies can we use to make that different? And I think the main one, that Kempo Karthar Rinpoche spoke about this one time, because this is a common question. And he said that making sure that we are present, that we practice having presence of mind when we're doing these things. He said when you do refuge, he said it can become rote, where you just blah, 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 the words, and it doesn't really touch you. He said, so if you find that that's starting to happen for you, he said, the next time you do your refuge prayer, he said, just stop a second and imagine how it would feel to be really in the presence of an enlightened being, the Buddha, and so on. He said, really just get a sense of how that would feel and how much respect you would feel. and how much, how important it would be for you to address them with sincerity and presence. And he said, and then you can also think about, he said, even though we are not enlightened beings now, we can gradually become enlightened beings through the practice of the Dharma. So he said, then you can make the aspiration that through the practice you're about to do, you will benefit beings. And then that way, he says, you're thinking about the Buddha, you're thinking about those sentient beings who are around you, and you're thinking about your aspiration. And he said, and then when you have really kind of developed the idea that the Buddhas have the key, right, that the Buddhas actually have the key to liberation from suffering, he said, then you can say your refuge prayer. So he seemed to feel that cultivating the real presence, genuine presence, and just bringing yourself back to where you are and sort of being where you are, fully being where you are, is one antidote. Do you have another idea, thought about that, or what do you think?
The only thing I'd say is also it's important maybe to have patience and understanding with yourself that there's going to be ups and downs along your journey in doing that.
That's a fair comment. The idea that what he's saying is that we also have to have some practice, some understanding and gentleness with ourselves. I'm going to add words to what you said, which is that practicing gentleness with ourselves and understanding that some days we're going to be right with it, and some days it's going to be beep, 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 beep. Yeah, I think that being understanding and always knowing that the next moment we can change things. Any time that something happens in the next moment, we can change that and impact that. I think remembering that the future is always imminent, you know, so.
Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you, that's a great question. Anybody else have a question or curiosity or something they'd like to talk about? While she's approaching the microphone, I want to, I think they may have already announced that Lama Karma Drodol will be here in August. And so he's actually coming to teach August 19th through 21st. So that's a commercial, sorry. Hey, Julie.
Hello, thank you for being here.
Good morning.
I wonder, what with the practice of the prayer wheel, is going on in your mind while you're spinning
sure.
the prayer wheel.
Yeah, while you're spinning the prayer wheel, she's asking what sort of practice can you do with your mind? Funny you should ask. Somebody asked me this last week also. And there's a couple of things you can do. Some people do the prayer wheel in concert with doing mantras. Some people will do them simultaneously, in which case your mind is not necessarily on the movement of the prayer wheel, but is on the prayers you are reciting. And the prayer wheel is just going on in the background, you know, sort of as like a background activity that you feel is beneficial and benefiting others. Because anybody who sees the prayer wheel or feels the breeze that goes by that prayer wheel is going to be benefited. So you think about the benefit of beings. That's a very easy practice to do with the prayer wheel, is to recite prayers and to think that you are sending benefit and goodness to all beings. And it's just automatic, right? You can have that kind of a thought. Additionally, you can use a meditation, a visualization meditation. And this was given by one of the Gelupa masters, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And I may not be quoting it absolutely correctly, but you can find it in his book, Wheel of Great Compassion. He wrote a whole book about prayer wheels. And Wheel of Great Compassion. And he says, one of the things you can do, he says, is if you're praying for something specific, let's say you're praying for someone who's sick. He says you can imagine, you can visualize or use your imagination to think that the sickness from the person is gathered into the center of the prayer wheel where it is blessed and destroyed. You know, the idea is that all of that sickness would go into the prayer wheel and be destroyed by the inherent awakened goodness in the center of the prayer wheel. Then you could imagine that light comes from the center of that prayer wheel and goes to the person who needs healing. So it's not you doing the healing, it's you're imagining the power of the prayers in the prayer wheel doing the healing. So there, and you can use that type of visualization with yourself too. Let's say you're having a particularly bad day where your emotions are out of control, or you just feel rotten or whatever. You can imagine as you spin the prayer wheel that your own negativities are going into the center of the prayer wheel where they are blessed and then destroyed. And that then light comes from the center of the prayer wheel and benefits you and blesses you and gives you strength. You see what I'm saying? So it's like you can use that type of practice. Of course, if you're me, what you do is you just spin it mindlessly while you're watching television, hoping that there's something beneficial that comes from it, right? Because I've seen several people do that, where they just spin their prayer wheel while they're doing sort of mindless activity to kind of flavor their mindless activity with something beneficial. So that's me. Okay, yeah, so. Anybody else have questions or things they're curious about? Yes.
It's not really so much a question, but I just, you know, we were talking about, you know, the kind of like a status of like, you know, having your beads and your things that, you know, kind of like portray that you're, you know, someone right. who is
spiritual person.
A spiritual person.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with that, we had a very special encounter back in the end of May when we went to the Grand Canyon. We had spent several days in Sonoma. Mm-hmm. And on our way to dinner, we stopped at this little shop called Little Tibet, and it was run by two Tibetan brothers. Mm-hmm. And they happened to notice that my prayer beads on my wrist were actually from Nepal.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And so we started to talk, and they were like, hey, did you know that we have this stupta here?
We have the what here?
Stupa, the stupa, sorry.
Oh, stupa, yes.
Yeah, we have the stupa here. And so they gave us directions. Uh-huh. And so we got to go out there, and it's probably 50, 60 feet.
What city is this?
Sonoma.
California.
Arizona.
Oh, Arizona. Okay, yeah.
And there's probably six prayer wheels, multiple different paths that went off into, you know, different, you know, yeah. statues. And mm-hmm. there was a absolutely beautiful carved Buddha. Mm-hmm. But it was just really amazing to mm-hmm. like have no idea we were that close.
Right.
To something so amazing. Mm-hmm. And just because we happened to be at the right place and
yeah.
the owner happened to notice something, that we had that opportunity mm-hmm. to go witness something that mm-hmm. is, you know, was very magical. And we got to sit there and meditate, and, you know, we gave offering. And it was just really, really amazing to have an opportunity on a Sunday when we were so far from home to not have to worry about the time change and trying to catch, you know, the Dharma talk or anything
right.
else, but to have that opportunity, so.
Yeah. I'm so happy to hear this story because yesterday when I was doing the stupa workshop here, we talked about, you've now discovered the joy of pilgrimage. Even though it was an unintentional pilgrimage when you walked into that shop, and the Tibetan brothers said, hey, there's a stupa nearby. And you went to the stupa and you saw they had the larger prayer wheels, didn't they? The big ones? Yeah. And that you can turn them usually they have a metal, circular metal a handle on them, and you can turn them as you walk by them. And because circumambulation, which means to walk around in a clockwise direction around a stupa, is a way of praying with the stupa. And so now you've discovered the joy of pilgrimage. And there is really something to it because When I was at the workshop yesterday, I recalled the story of talking to a European man who had participated in the creation of a stupa there in Crestone, Colorado, where we were visiting. And he said he likes to think of stupas as being like a spiritual dynamo. Now, people from science know that a dynamo is something when you put energy in, it puts energy out. So you put energy into it and then it puts energy out. And so he said he thought of them as being a spiritual dynamo. He said because we bring our faith, devotion, and so on to the presence of the stupa, honoring the stupa, and that charges up the stupa. And then the stupa, having inside it prayers and relics and so on, that gives out positive energy. So we put our faith and devotion into it, and from it we receive inspiration, right? And so we kind of keep each other charged up. And my teacher, Kenpo Kartha Rinpoche, said that when you're in the presence of a stupa and the relics inside it, it's like being present in front of the Buddha personally. And so any aspiration you make in front of a stupa, it is said, is more powerful than other types of aspirations. And so when we did, I was part of a group that did three pilgrimages to stupas in the United States, 2013, 2014, 2015. So it was either 2012 through 2014 or 2013 through 2015. I forget the exact years. But we did a tour of stupas in Colorado. We did a tour of stupas in New Mexico. And then we also did one of the stupas of Northeast New York. And we put 20 people on a bus, and we found accommodations and food for them every day. It was a delight from start to finish to put 20 people on a bus tour. With absolutely ordinary people being the bus drivers saying, okay, this is weird, but all right, let's do it. And so we did these. We did these pilgrimages, and everybody said the same thing, that when they came to the stupa, they felt this inspiration to be a better person. It inspired them to practice more because there was some kind of dynamic energy that came from that feeling of aspiration and that feeling of goodness. So thank you for sharing your pilgrimage story. And yes, we will do them again once COVID subsides. We'll start the pilgrimages again, because why not? I mean, like I say, 20 people in a bus doing nothing but praying for like 3 days straight, let's do it. You know, let's just do it. How's my time? Oh yeah, I think we have time for another question. Yes, yeah, go come, yes, right ahead. Yeah, and you can bend. It's bendy. Yeah, I know, it's bendy. You can actually bend it. There you go. Okay.
This is kind of talking about what you were expanding on. In early 2000s, I took my mom on pilgrimage to Lourdes. She had forgotten her prayer beads, so she borrowed my mala. So in exchange, we went to Sedona, to the Amitabha Stupa in Sedona. And my mom lived in Phoenix, so it was very close. And we went up, and it became her favorite place to go.
Wow.
I would circumambulate, she would meditate. So every time we started, I would pick her up from Phoenix, we would drive up the mountain, find our hotel. The first thing every morning, we would go to the stupa.
Okay.
And if you ever have a chance, it's a phenomenal experience. And it's Amitabha, Pure Lands. So when she passed away in 2017, I dedicated a tile for her.
Oh, wonderful.
At the Amitabha Stupa. So even though she was very staunchly Catholic, she had that same resonance mm-hmm. as when I took her to the Great Healing Shrine at Lourdes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well worth the time, the money, the effort, whatever it is, because you walk away with a feeling of profound connection,
correct,
irrespective of your religious background. So,
thank you for sharing that story. I just can't say enough about this. Those folks who have done the Camino de Santiago, I've talked to people who've done that as well, which is another Christian pilgrimage in Europe. Lourdes, France, right? Yeah, is one of the sites where the Virgin Mary was said to have appeared and to have granted miracles and things like this. And I feel that all of these places are powerful, partly because of what we bring to it and what we as human beings invest it with. We invest it with beauty, we invest it with power, and that it actually then benefits, because all that positive energy that we invest it with and that it naturally has from the beginning, we help each other. So I think that people come back from pilgrimage feeling refreshed and they want to stay. One more thing, I've had people tell me that when they come into this room, they don't want to leave. And I think that there's lots of reasons for this. And part of it is that we have a statuary on the shrine that have relics inside, and that the room is kind of built for this feeling of compassionate goodness and stability and warmth. And so I can't wait until we decorate it fully. It's only a blank canvas now, but it'll eventually become a good spot. But I've had people say the same thing, like you said, that you went there and you went every day and you kind of like didn't want to leave. And it's because of the presence of goodness there. Yes, this will be, let's see, you're our last question today.
I'll try to make it fast.
That's all right, no need.
My background's in research, and I'm frequently trying to make different parallels to, because I love a lot of the, you know, how a lot of the Buddhist practices have had some science backing them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're talking about using intentions, you know, with these different rituals, and something that came to mind, around our Earth, we have several different machines that are random data generators, and they just spew out random data, but there's been times when they go to non-random.
What was that last part?
There have been times when they go to non-random.
Okay.
Like they go to pattern, mm-hmm, like Princess.
Oh, they have times when they go to, yeah, from random patterns of data to specific.
Otherwise, they're just random, but like the day Princess Diana died went to pattern.
Hmm.
And world meditation days,
really?
They go to non-random.
Whoa. They go to, okay, that's interesting.
They go to pattern. So, mm-hmm, you know, so when you think about, you know, we're doing these intentions, well,
right,
we are. That really does move this, yeah, energy that we, that's the only way we currently have to quantify it,
right,
those random data generators, but
yeah,
those intentions seem to do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I super appreciate you sharing this, because I think it's really, I think it's illustrative of the fact that the mind has incredible power that we have not yet understood and not yet really quantified or fathomed in any way. And the fact that these random data generators around the Earth fall into a pattern of generation on days when it's World Meditation Day and days when the world is together in tragedy or like when Princess Diana did it. So I feel like this is why I think that what His Holiness Karmapa had to say this morning about war in Europe, because he was talking specifically about war in Europe. That's where he started. But and he said that it makes some people feel frightened and hopeless. He said, but we have to remember that we can have an impact in our own world of the people we know, and that we should and could and should try to continue to influence ourselves to be gentle and to be workable and to be kind, and that we should influence others to be gentle and workable and kind. And that in this way, we are doing what we can to add to the counterbalance to all the violence and hatred. He said, right now, people are just full of difficult feelings, anger, and they don't know what to do with it. And so all of this violence is happening. And so we have to find a way to put some goodness into the world to counterbalance the negativity that's happening. So thank you for sharing that. Well, because of time, we'll have to stop here. But I can't thank you enough for just, you know, kindly entertaining the topic of ritual practice and how we already do lots of rituals. I didn't even talk about the mundane rituals that get us through our day. I'm like one of those people that when I'm tired and I have to get up and be somewhere on time, I'm on autopilot from the moment my feet hit the floor until I'm in the car going somewhere. I've just done a whole bunch of stuff and I have no idea what it was, but it was automatic because I did it every day and every day and every day and every day. They talk about your breakfast and coffee rituals and things like that. We already do it. So now, since we're already doing it, why not add some beneficial dharmic ones to our day? So I hope this inspires you, and I hope I'm looking forward to doing a regular stupa practice. We haven't got it set up yet, but when we get it set up during the fair weather months on certain Saturdays, we'll all get together and make offerings to the stupa. But you can come down anytime to pray here. You will be on candid camera, however. There is a security camera on the stupa. I asked for it. But the fact of the matter is you can come down here, and I know some people who come down here on a regular basis to pray. So it's here for you. It's a service to the community. Let's dedicate our goodness. The tradition of dedicating goodness is how Buddhists sort of tie a ribbon around positive things they do. And we'll start with the recitation of this in English, and then we'll come back and do it in Tibetan. So here we go. By this merit may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. Oh, sonam dehi tam che zipani, tom ne ne pedranam pam che ne. Ke gana chi balap trupai si pe so le troar trohar shok jampal pa wo chi tar kem padang kuntu zampol de an de shin te de da kun gi che su da lo ching Gehi wadi ta tam che rab tu mo. We'll sit quietly for just a moment, reflecting on the dedication. Okay, thanks everyone. And thank you to the team, the AV team. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.